This is Web Crawler with Andrew Hawthorne. The views and opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of this station. Web Crawler with Andrew Hawthorne on the VOCM Radio Network.
We talk a lot about online culture on the show and how real-world culture and traditional forms of expression translate online. But what about the other way around? Once upon a time, there were arcades in every mall to play video games, but as those games got more sophisticated at home, the arcades went away. Now, almost the reverse process is happening, with the experience of playing a video game going offline and into the real world with analog simulations called escape rooms. They've exploded in popularity over the last few years and all over the world. If you go to TripAdvisor.com right now and ask what there is to do in any given city in London or Rome, chances are a list of escape rooms is actually in the top 10 attractions. Here to talk about that phenomenon is Mark Denine, one of the founders of a local escape room called Escape Quest, located in downtown St. John's. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Andrew.
So just for those who aren't familiar, what is an escape room?
So an escape room is an interactive live-action adventure game. Players enter a room and must work together, which is important, to find every clue, solve every puzzle, and find a way out of the room in 45 minutes or less.
So how did you get into this? Where did this come from?
My friend Andy back in Vancouver was like, hey, I heard of this thing. We should go try it someday. And he sent me an article. I was like, that sounds up my alley. So we went to this place out in Richmond in Vancouver, which was like a total hotspot for it. And I walked in the room and instantly kind of fell in love. It was I spent a lot of time in theater and film and all of that stuff, and I just kind of looked at the thing, and there was props, and there were sets, and there was a little story, and there was all sorts of things. I was like, that's kind of my life's work, just like smashed into one business. And so I came home, sat down with a good friend of mine. We had a little conversation at the Duke, and he got very intrigued and excited, and he brought it on his partner, Nicole, and our other friend, Mark Weber, and then we got together and chatted about it, and away we went.
Yeah, so talk me through your first initial impressions. So you've never heard of this thing. You go to an escape room, and it's like you said, it's kind of a puzzle game. It's a video game. It's theater that you're the main character in all in one. How did that hit you initially?
Well, like everyone, there's probably that moment of initially what do I do now, right? And so it's you kind of explore through it, and you find your little key item. But I remember I walked into that room, and it was like a deck, and there was like one of those blue water lights, and there was like this old barometer kicking around. And it's just like, what do I do here? And I was there with another team of three people as well, and we're all kind of puzzled, as you would be. It was like, it's on the side of this door. What's beyond this door? What do we do?
I was going to ask, why do you think that this is really hit with so many people, not just here, but around the world? Why has this become so popular now?
I think it's getting out and interacting with people in real life and accomplishing something together, you know? It's been so interesting to watch over the past year and a half of being open, of like people kind of coming in. One of my favorite customers, I call, like, you know, dad, who's like, the kids are going to go play that. Oh, I don't know. I don't think I'll have any fun with that. And then about two puzzles in, you hear him screaming Yahoo at the top of his lungs, and he is good to go. And he comes out and probably says, it's the most fun I've had in my life.
Yeah, like you say, it is a real team sport, because with the 40 or 45 minute time limit, you really can't do this on your own. You have to work together, and it brings to mind all those kind of, you know, stereotypical team building retreats that you see businesses going on, where you got to close your eyes and fall backwards into somebody. But you really do have to trust a team to kind of think on your feet and solve, you know, Sherlock Holmes-esque puzzles to just get out of the room.
Yeah, it's definitely fun that way too, right? And it's like you were saying, kind of in your intro there, you're talking about like, it's almost, you know, it's virtual reality, but we put you in a reality. So you have all of the tools of a video game, but you're in actual physical space, really fun to actually physically touch things, getting that actual, like, touch.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think, you know, video games are more sophisticated than they've ever been, and you can interact with people in video games. If you go to, you know, Warcraft or a lot of online games, there are people all around you in a virtual space, and the graphics look realistic now and all of this stuff. What do you think is driving people not only to that or away from that, but back into the physical sphere with tactile things to touch?
I play a lot of online games myself as well, but there's just something about being within the presence of people, feeding off their energy, even just making eye contact. You know, like there's that I'm actually here. I'm not just a voice through an avatar, swinging awkwardly at a rock or tree. In a Minecraft perspective,
what kind of people do you get coming in? You mentioned like the dad and all this stuff. Is this mostly gamers and people who would be playing those online games, or young people, or do you get a wide swath of people coming in to try this?
Our audience has been so varied; it went beyond my expectation. When we started, I kind of really thought to get just those like hardcore kind of like gamer people. But, I've seen people of all ages, you know, like, typically, we say probably grade 6 and up for young kids, but sometimes they come along and they have a totally different perspective on the world than an adult would. You know, they're weighed down with less baggage. So they see through things a bit clearer sometimes, even though there's some concepts that they might need help with. But, in terms of one of our strongest demographic is, female. Which I didn't expect initially, like our bachelorette parties probably outweigh our bachelor parties probably 9-1. It's kind of nuts. And, even just like as you were talking before about like team building and corporate stuff, like we get a lot of people coming in to do that because word has gotten around that it's probably the most fun you can have doing that.
That's really fascinating because, you know, obviously girls do play video games as much as boys do, but the video game industry and video game online culture is notoriously antagonistic towards women. But you're seeing more women coming in than men. Wow.
Yeah, it's great. I guess on that bachelor party thing, we're kind of the alternative to some other typical bachelor party activity, shall we say.
Sure. So talk us through, how do you go about building an escape room? What starts as a closet and ends up as like a video game level for you?
generally our process, we sit down and we talk about, we just brainstorm for a while. It's like, what's an interesting location? And then we, come up with a few, and then we'll figure out like, what does that location do? Let's start with a science lab. You know, it's like, okay, well, one puzzle involves a science experiment. Okay, what are other things in a science lab? And you can kind of build up there. It's like gamification is kind of the term, you know. When we did the LSPU Hall recently, of course, the theater, as I explained earlier, is clearly one of my, is my wheelhouse. So I got really excited about that because then I was like, oh, I could have a puzzle that's based on like props resetting, which is, an activity that I do in life, but nobody else would do. So I can figure out a way to make a game out of that, or even just a lighting cue that makes sense to something, or even, giving people the opportunity to break the come on stage and have lights hit them was really fun. You got to go through that process, and you find a good few like big ideas, and then you just start kind of mapping it out into a flow. Kevin, our partner there, he's really good at kind of weaving everything together and keeping track of all those moving parts. And it's a lot of fun. I gotta say, I could do it for hours and hours and hours. It's probably my favorite part of the whole thing.
Yeah, how long does it take you from inception to execution to plan out one of these things?
Hours and hours and hours. It takes a long time, actually, I got to say, because there's so many bits, there's so many details, there's so many, just making sure things flow correctly. And then there's, beyond building it, just, deciding on a layout, deciding how much furniture to put in the room. Because I've found, too, like, you don't want to overly they core a lot of these rooms because you create things called red herrings, you know, which is, for those not in the know, it's you know, something that just throws you off entirely. It's completely irrelevant, and then you're focused on it, you know. So if I have like 800 candles and, you know, 6,000 skulls and only one skull is relevant, it's not really useful.
How do you judge the difficulty of what you're putting together? You know, have you ever been in a situation where you've created a problem that's like, oh, nobody's ever going to figure this out? This is too beyond the pale here.
Yeah, that definitely happens. I mean, puzzle design is so tricky because when you create a puzzle, you instantly have your own confirmation bias, right? It's like, I know the solution to this and I know how to get there. So it's hard to remove yourself from it. So the only real way to do it is to let people try it. You can workshop and prototype it a few times. And you eventually start coming to me, but you know, occasionally you do hit that thing. It's just, one of the lessons we learned kind of later was, if people aren't getting something, or if you're giving a hint on something constantly, then it might mean the puzzle is not communicated well. You know, it's like you might need to figure out a way to add in that first layer of logic as to how this puzzle works. And then, you know, a bit more of a guided tour. You know, it's like I gave you three seashells and it's like, what do we do with these? And then I eventually can find something that adds an instruction. It's like, this seashell is red. This one is yellow. This one is blue. You know, so then there's a color and you look at an objective like a lock or something and you see red, yellow, and blue. It's like, oh, maybe these are connected, you know, so it's making those connections and making that all that stuff very communicative.
With all of the aspects of this to balance in terms of how difficult a puzzle is or how many puzzles there are or even content, how do you balance age range when you're considering this? Because you mentioned that a family will go into a room and you'll have, you know, like a 10-year-old kid and also their dad solving the same problems and getting the same enjoyment out of it. How do you create that experience?
It's a tough one to figure out. An issue we do have, of course, is trying to design in a way that everyone has fun. Unfortunately, success is not always what's going to happen. Sometimes you're not going to make it. But if everything along the way is fun, you've still had fun, right? You may not have gotten to the ultimate goal, but you had a lot of fun along the way. But the other side of that coin as well, of course, is, you know, for the people that are really like, you know, like cracking, like you had some groups come through that are just, they just blow through it. And you're like, just about to do something else. And you see them walk out the door and you're like, oh my God, what did you do? And like, sometimes people just don't get caught on anything, you know? So trying to design for them plus like, you know, like younger audiences as well. It's a difficult balance, but generally speaking, if everything is fun, the experience will be positive.
This is Web Trawler with Andrew Hawthorne on the VOCM radio network.
There's also the narrative component as well, and people often talk about, you know, one of the reasons you can't make a good movie adaptation of a video game is because a game is not a story, and you know, following along to puzzles does not translate into a beginning and middle end structure that we would have in a film. How much is the narrative component a part of what you're putting together there? Is story flow important to this? And do you even consider this a story sometimes?
That was actually one of our goals when we set out there, because having done a few beforehand, I was like, well, there's no really like, you know, I kind of like, there's some stories that came by and it was like, not really a story. You've got to set the scene and you've got to give people a purpose, you know? So having like an objective and a goal and that being all part of the story, and then you try and splice in little bits of it as you go on, right? So as you do a puzzle, there's maybe hopefully some little bit of it that's adding to a general story. So we've been experimenting with different takes on it. We'd love to try and like amp up the storytelling thing, but, it's, you know, some people aren't interested and some people are very interested in it. So, it's good sometimes, because sometimes you'll have someone that's maybe not great at puzzles, but loves a good story. So they'll sit down and they'll comb through that story. Like our initial Undead on Duckworth Room had a bunch of video journals. And if you followed through those, you got this whole story of how this whole zombie apocalypse began to start. Right. And, you know, some people love that. And some people were like, okay, what's the next puzzle? So just trying to keep it interesting and make it wide appealing to a wide range of intelligences and such. Right.
Yeah, and speaking of that, you've incorporated actors and performances into this, too. You said the video journals that you had in Undead on Duckworth, and you had video of zombies in that one as well, kind of outside the door banging to get in.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, and the one in the LSPU hall, you had an actual live component where there was somebody that you talked to over the headset at one point.
And that guy, you know what, that's one of those things that sometimes you strike gold on something and it's totally by accident. Like, surprise, that was me.
That was you?
That was me.
You led me astray, sir.
I didn't. Maybe. Who knows? So, you know, I was initially just supposed to be kind of silent, and I was hoping to get, you know, a certain clue out to someone. But, of course, I'm a stage manager by trade, so when I see something that says, like, LX2 go, I know that's a lighting cue. This is one of those situations we're talking about earlier about, you know, making something heard. And, like, it's like other people are like, what is this? I don't know what this thing is. What does it have to do with this headset? So eventually I started realizing that if, of course, we're talking about ghosts, like, I can be an actual character. Like, I started to get this rise out of people when they'd be like, put on the headset, they'd be like, hello? And I'd be like, hello. And then they'd get all creeped out. And then, you know, some people are very fun to play with. And it just grew from there. And it just became kind of a storytelling slash helpful, sometimes helpful ghost.
Where do you take your inspiration for these things? You mentioned the zombie one and the ghost story at the LSPU Hall. You've had superheroes. You even dipped a bit into history with the 1892 fire room. Like, how do you come up with those ideas?
Well, that's it's just, you know, it's like, again, it comes out of brainstorming. But, I mean, you know, it's like, well, what's hot right now? What's good? Like, what do people like? And, you know, obviously we came in, we wanted to give it like kind of a St. John's flair. So I think one of the first things we were like, yes, was 1892. It's such an interesting time. It's, you know, it's got great drama to it. There's something about, you know, fire that's always very dramatic, you know? So, and, people responded so well to that one. You know, and then superheroes, we, you know, like, well, superhero movies are really big. Like, let's do that. People are watching those all over the place. And of course, The Walking Dead. So, you know, zombies are just so blatantly hot right now. So, trying to appeal to, you know, different sensibilities. So, like, all of our different rooms have a certain genre to them as well. So, we're trying to hit different notes.
Was there anything that you wanted to do that maybe you just couldn't figure out how to execute or you'd like to keep on the back burner someday to get out there?
Oh, there is plenty, Andrew. I will be cryptic about that. No idea is unaccomplishable. It can all be done. It's just a matter of figuring out the right way to do it.
What's the next step in this trend? So we've seen escape rooms, like where do you go from here? Whole buildings or like a different kind of interactive puzzle theater? What's the next step?
That's a good question. I think sometime at some point, you know, like I've seen a lot of people do kind of like interactive theater pieces on it and such. Like, you know, I have a couple of friends in Toronto who were talking about a piece they were involved with. And Toronto's huge for these right now, by the way. The next step, I think immersion is the next kind of level of this, like maybe making it completely fully immersive, like none of it's part of a game. I mean, the next step has kind of already happened in places like, you know, like Disneyland and stuff like that. I'm sure you've gone through, you know, your haunted mansion or your, all these other kind of rides. So like theme parks and stuff play a lot into it. Honestly, more technology is a big thing. Like the Arduino community and the Maker community have been really vital in like finding out new ways to do things. Some people would say virtual reality is probably the next step, but
that's kind of a step backwards into video games, though, isn't it?
It's true. Well, yeah, I know. It's kind of a fun. It's funny, right? Because now people are, you know, there's like virtual escape rooms and stuff like that. And I think they've worked more or less to a certain degree, but I don't think you're not going back to that. You're losing that interaction with people again. So I think immersion is probably the next step, just making it more fully immersive. I had a wacky idea for kind of a post-apocalyptic resort at one point, in which you would stay in this post-apocalyptic world and, you know, events happen. It's kind of like Fallout, the vacation.
Or the Standals.
Yeah, exactly. It's total pie-in-the-sky idea with probably limited appeal. And it probably wouldn't make for a great vacation. But
I don't know. There's all these doomsday preppers out there. They'd probably be great at that.
It's true. Pack your bug out bag. It's time to go down to the swamp.
What's the next thing that you guys are up to? You just did something at the Geo Center, right?
Yeah, so we built a time machine there, which currently, as we're speaking in the past now, I had built a time machine, and I've traveled to the future to speak to you today.
All right, well, this is already a time machine. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, no, that was a really great experience. It was, it will be a great experience. Because, the Geo Center is a very fun thing. So, like I was saying earlier about finding things to do in a space, like, the Geo Center is full of interesting things because it talks about space and, geology and history and the planets and, all of that is there and all of that is super fun to play with and makes for great puzzles. So I'm pretty excited about this. I've got a lot of work ahead of me before we set up on Sunday, but that's pretty great. The other thing, of course, we completed recently was the sequel / spiritual successor to Undead on Duckworth, which was our initial zombie themed room. So, of course, that theme was really hot and people really liked it, and people still like it. I've had people come back a couple of times to try that one. So we did actually close that one down in January, and we've been renovating it for quite a while. And just last week, we actually launched it. So it's actually Undead 2 Patient 709. So that's finally launched. And so far, I think I'm pretty pleased. It was the first time we swapped out a room from our facility.
Yeah, I imagine, is that a concern? Because you've got a giant physical space with most of these. Do you have to, how often do you have to change those up?
I mean, we're figuring that out as we go. I think we're trying to aim for maybe a year and a half, I guess, is our goal. But, I mean, that's all pretty loosey-goosey. It's tough to say, because, Undead wasn't suffering. We just wanted, a lot of clientele we had built beforehand, we wanted to see them again. It was just, great people had great times, but they'd ran out of stuff to do at our facility. Some people come in one day, and then they have them all beaten by the end of the weekend, So it was creating something different. The sequel was particularly kind of, challenging in a way, because, it was coming up with the same theme, but finding a new way to do it. And I think so far, we've been really successful at it. I'm still kind of amazed at how completely different it is from the last room. You're still in that ChemCore Labs facility, but you're somewhere else in that building, And it's 28 weeks later. Knock, knock.
I got it.
It's really exciting. It's really atmospheric. I'm really happy with how so many stuff about it. We did a lot of good work on it, and we're just we play tested it to the world and to our groups. But now we sent it out into the world, and we'll be tweaking and refining all the time, right? None of the rooms that we had, we ever stopped tweaking them. There's always something else that can be better,
Did you find people would get stuck on one particular thing, and you're like, oh, we kind of got to sand the edge off of this here?
Yeah, exactly. So if there's something you're giving a hint on constantly, you eventually have to take a step back and realize, is this too hard, or is this not communicated well, right? And, you know, you go through the process, you put it out, you know, and you still never want to make it maybe too easy, you know, because there's, you know, if it was really easy, then it's probably not quite as rewarding if you get there.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
And I hear you guys are also a premier sponsor of Sci-Fi on the Rock this year. Can you tell us a bit about what's going on down there?
Yeah, actually, Andrew, we're the Latinum sponsor of Sci-Fi on the Rock this year, which I don't know if you're a Star Trek person, but it's a very precious metal within Star Trek. A bit better than platinum.
Taking your word for it.
So we'll be doing, you know, we'll be all over the place there. And we'll also, for the past 2 years, we've done an original escape room for that. So this year we've got a bigger space to work with, and we're going to try and make a much bigger escape room out of it. It should be pretty exciting. I mean, the other thing we do have on tap this year as well, we're also looking at expansion. So we should actually have two more rooms for you coming in the future, as well as whatever else we flip out of the original space. So, it's all still at 156 Duckworth, so it should be a pretty exciting summer.
Where can people find you in real life and online if they want to know more or maybe visit one of the escape rooms?
They can find us at 156 Duckworth Street in downtown St. John's. That's just past the Chocolate Company and not quite at Downtown Comics. That usually helps people. Online, you can find us at www.escapequest.ca. You can also find us on Facebook at EscapeQuestNL and on Twitter at EscapeQuestNL and on Instagram at EscapeQuestNL.
Great. And you can find me, of course, at VOCM.com and at Hawthorne Andrew J on Twitter to tell me what you thought of the show. Mark, thank you very much for coming on today.
Oh, no problem. Thank you for having me.
Anytime. Cheers, folks.
This is Web Trawler with Andrew Hawthorne on the VOCM Radio Network.